Welcome into the Golf Central podcast presented by Callaway Golf. In this week's episode, we will riff on the new green reading materials that will be allowed on the PGA Tour in 2022. We'll talk about Rex's wild week in Bermuda, including that wacky, wet, windy finish, assuming Rex has actually made it back in time from Bermuda. We'll also look ahead to the remaining 3 weeks on the PGA Tour's fall schedule, and even a little chat, if Rex is willing, about the Korn Ferry Tour Q School final stage, which ends this week. But first, the new Jaws full toe wedge by Callaway is designed to give you full control on every shot. These wedges combine full face Jaws grooves, offset groove and groove technology, and an all new raw face, giving you the spin and control you need around the green. The full toe shape and a specialized C grind make bunker shots, high flop shots, and chips easy to hit from any lie. They also provide enhanced control on full wedge shots with a toe pad that pushes the CG higher for more controlled trajectory. To learn more about Jaws Full Toe, visit CallawayGolf.com. Rex, I actually played golf for the first time since our little soiree the Sunday before the Masters. So that's what, a six-month gap in between rounds. There were certainly circumstances why I went this long. This is probably the longest I've gone since I was like eight without playing a round of golf. Had the move, had a very pregnant wife, and now have a seven-week-old daughter. But Rex, I got to tell you, I have never been more demoralized walking off a golf course than I was on Sunday afternoon. Full-blown driver yips. Full-blown. When I talk, you know how when I play in a left-to-right wind, like it's good, it's right going right. I had that shot, but in a right-to-left wind. It was still starting miles right, like off the planet right, and going even further right. It was basically being hit off the hosel. I have zero desire to ever play golf again. I may just sell my clubs and invest in another barbecue smoker, because it seems like that's where the future is for me and not necessarily playing recreational golf.
That seems wildly extreme, if I'm being honest. Do you want to talk about
I'm Halloween? In a very dark place.
Wow, talk about a Halloween horror story. Full-blown driver yips. Nothing sends me chills down the spine like hearing full-blown driver yips. Give it some time.
Off the planet misses.
You had Georgia, so I'm going to go ahead and say you had a pretty good weekend. So go Dogs. I'll give you that.
Yeah, and I mean, Cam had a great time during trick-or-treating. He dressed up as a waste management garbage man, which is his one true passion in life, since it's, it doesn't appear to be golf at the moment. But other than that, I mean, I'm still thinking about some of these drives. Like, I used to be like, I was a horrible driver of the golf ball in high school, and I was actually a good player. Shout out Finger Lakes East golf champion in fall 2004. Like, I was a pretty good player. And we played a lot of golf, and I got down to about a three handicap. Like, I can play golf. I know how to play golf. This driver is an absolute problem. Like, you cannot play from where I'm playing. I had to have lost 12 balls.
I think you're being a little harsh on yourself, though. As you just pointed out, you had not played since six months.
But normally that's okay. Normally I can take an extended break and actually sometimes even play better, because your mind's kind of free. You've got lowered expectations. This was an absolute train wreck. It has left me zero hope and zero motivation to try again.
All right. Well, this is a happy way to start the podcast.
Can't you help me?
There's nothing I can do. I think you've watched me. I cannot go back to the Finger Lakes Championship to rest on my laurels. I have nothing in my past to lead me to believe that I'm going to enjoy myself. However, I will say, and this might make you. Yeah, there's nothing I can do for you. I have no Finger Lakes Championship to fall back on. I'm an awful golfer. I've learned to embrace being an awful golfer. I can do it and still have a good time. And I think you might be being a little too hard on yourself. As you pointed out, it's been 6 months since you played golf. Give it some time, man. Relax. Just go to the range, maybe. You know, work on the game a little bit.
Like, I'm not out there to try and qualify for the PGA Tour. I'm out there to enjoy myself. But there is absolutely nothing enjoyable about dropping and hitting three on the right side of every hole. Like, it's just not a great way to spend 5 hours. Like, I can drink all the beer in the world, and I tried. But it's just not going to help. It's just not going to help. We played St. John's Golf and Country Club. It was a fine track. I mean, I certainly didn't play the golf course as it was intended. So I can't give you an accurate assessment of the routing or the type of diversity in the holes. I mean, it was essentially I was dropping three on the right side. From that point, I would have to pitch out because I'm blocked out by trees. And then I'm trying to scramble to avoid a double.
Yeah, that does not sound like fun. But this might make you feel better, actually. So sitting in the bar on Monday in Bermuda on my way home, which I caught my flight.
Thank you, Delta.
Yes, my preferred carrier came through for me, which I was very happy with. We were talking about the conditions with players who were kind of just assembled talking about it. And Russell Knox talked in, much like you did, just horrifying sequences about how he sometime during the round on Sunday when things got really, really bad in Bermuda, he had got very, very similar situation. The ball would start right and it would go right. And he said to the point that even in a right to left wind, there was nothing he can do about it. So if it makes you feel better at all.
What was the fix, Russ? Russ, what was the fix, my man? Tell us.
We never got around to the fix. It was just, let's laugh. Let's ha ha ha. Let's roll. Because
this is not a laughing matter.
What I loved, and this kind of goes to what I kind of wanted to talk about from Bermuda, is based on social media, which probably isn't the best measurement here, if I'm being honest, but based on social media, the bad weather on Thursday and Sunday is what made that tournament. Because people love to see the Russell Knoxes of the world hit sideways golf shots. There is nothing more entertaining to the average golf fan, it seems, than just a terrible hit golf shot in the middle of an absolute storm.
I mean, it's an absolutely beautiful location, Rex. I believe that was the first time you've covered a golf tournament there. People were enamored on social media initially with the Bermuda field struggling and eventually failing to reach its 132 player cap, which even though the PGA Tour says happened, a year and a half ago, it's certainly one of the few times in recent memory that PGA Tour players scoffed and did not make the trip for $1 million first place prize, full FedEx Cup points, and a Masters invitation. They still could not reach the capacity field in Bermuda. Now, there was a couple of reasons for that. We touched on the podcast last week. The vaccination protocols, the COVID protocols, the remote locations certainly all played a role. But what a weird tournament. All credit, of course, to Lucas Herbert, 25-year-old Australian who won his first PGA Tour event, the first time winner of the new PGA Tour season, moved inside the top 50 in the world rankings up to 43, I believe. Going to be in the Masters, going to be in a host of other big time tournaments. He's proven himself to be a world class player at this point. So I'm interested to see what he can do to build off this in 2022. But Rex, it was a weird finish. I mean, you had Scott Stallings coming from 14 shots back, nearly to steal the thing. Patrick Reed almost won the thing from the clubhouse. You had Danny Lee stumble. You had Taylor Pendrith, the 54-hole leader, fail to make a birdie in his final round 76. What was it like on the grounds, and kind of what were your takeaways from the final round?
Well, I wanted to touch on Taylor Pendrith because it was fascinating. He takes a three-stroke lead into the final round. Canadian, lived with Corey Connors. It's just a really kind of cool story and fits into that.
Very good player too, Rex. He's top 30 at the U.S. Open. So even though he's a little green on the PGA Tour, he's a heck of a talent.
And I will say that having never been in this position before, given the circumstances that we had with wind gusts of 40 miles an hour and a driving rain, everything that went into Sunday, that I can't say that I was completely surprised by how it played out, simply because Lucas Herbert is a first-year tour player technically, but he had won twice on the European Tour, and both of those wins had higher strengths of field than what he won against in Bermuda.
So that Dubai and the Irish Open.
Open this year, which had a really, really good
field.
Yeah, and Graham McDowell, he lives in Orlando. He knows him a little bit. He just called him a dogged player. I mean, I think what we saw on Sunday is what we should come to expect from Lucas Herbert. And a really lovely fellow, but there was two things. And again, this is sitting in the bar on Monday in Bermuda waiting to leave. And just some of the coolest people that I love hanging out with in golf. And that's Jerry Foltz and Karen Stupples, who were both on the telecast. And we were just kind of talking about the finish. And the first thing that came up was Danny Lee and how he had an opportunity to win and then just seemed to lose his mind in a three-hole stretch. He double bogeys, bogey, bogey, and pretty much plays his way out. He does battle back, but what's fascinating is it seemed like he sped up his game. He got out of rhythm, whatever it is that happened. It was fascinating to me to watch this transpire, because when you talk to people who Jerry Foltz, who have been in the game, they'll tell you that you may feel like you have the same pace, but in the heat of the moment, you very, very, that's the natural tendency to speed up, just like you probably did. When things started to go sideways for you this weekend, you probably just sped up and just wanted to get to your ball and just wanted to chip out, just wanted to try to not make a double bogey. It's kind of amazing, though, when you see a player at that level who has won on the PGA Tour do it.
I mean, 3 career wins, 31 years old. I mean, he's been a pro for more than a decade, like competed in major championships. And you're saying even the pressure and the moment got to him, even got to a player of Danny Lee's experience.
Because I asked him, yeah, I asked him afterwards, you know, were you on the clock? Did you
choke? Like, is that the question you asked him?
No. I try to avoid those questions because usually those don't end up very well for me. But, you know, did you get out of rhythm? Did you speed up for some reason? And he felt like he maintained the same pace. Anyone who watched that final round will tell you different. And the other conversation, and this was the one I really wanted
Danny to bring Lee, up. Danny Lee in denial. There's the headline from Rex's game story. I just pulled
Danny
it up.
Danny Lee in denial. Again, anyone who watched can attest to that. The other one I wanted to bring up, and I really wanted to get your thoughts on this, you and I being baseball guys right now, right? So we watch baseball. I think you and I probably had the same reaction the other night watching the World Series. Nothing bothers me more in baseball than the shift. Just hit it to right field. It's very, very simple. This is killing me. This is Little League baseball stuff. Just hit it to right field. They won't do it because apparently the numbers and the new metrics and whatever rounds tell them, nope, you're better off statistically just going to your strengths. Pull the ball. Hit straight into the shift and you're better off doing it that
way. Just find that tiny little gap in the in the coverage that you can run it through. Sure.
So I go back to Sunday with Taylor Pendrith, who, even after you pointed out not making any birdies, not having a great day, still kind of had an outside chance going to the par 5 17th hole. And I had asked him early in the week what his plan was. Now, Taylor is crazy long. He is in that 180 ball speed category. Top 10 this season on the PGA Tour. He's one of the new breeds. We're going to see him hit some amazing drives. But the way that 17th hole is at Port Royal Golf Club is it didn't fit his driver. He was always going to have to take the lake on. You had a bunker left and a lake right. It was never going to be a very good high percentage shot. His thinking, though, he could hit it so far, even if he puts it in the hazard, he takes a drop, he can still hit on in 3 with a short iron, because it would be probably a mid iron to a short iron and still have a chance for birdie, which I totally get. Trailing by 1 stroke, he steps to that tee on 17 and tries to do the same thing. It completely unravels. He hits it in the water, gets sideways again, ends up making a double bogey, does not play out the way he had hoped it would be. So my question to you is, at what point do we stop listening to what the experts say? Like, they're going to tell you that, okay, Taylor, this is your strength. Let's do this. At what point does situational awareness come into this thinking?
Now, the counterpoint to that, of course, is what if he pulls it off? What if he absolutely threads the needle with a 340-yard blast?
Well, but he did.
But if he does, if that's his strength, if that's what he feels gives him a better chance, I haven't taking a deep dive into his advanced metrics, but he probably has a better chance to thread the needle with his tee shot than perhaps he does hitting a mid iron inside 30 feet. You know, if that's his rationale, he wants to pump it as far as he can down there, knowing that if he has a 7, 8, 9 iron into the green, he can pull off that shot. I'm all for it. I think if we had Scott Fawcett on this podcast, he of the decade fame, I think his advice would probably be full send, play to your strengths. More times than not, probably, it is going to pay off. The question that always comes down to, what is your best chance to make a birdie? If he's trailing by 1 shot, he knows that he has to make 4. How do you go about doing that? Only the player knows that. I mean, you can show him all the analytics you want, but if he's standing on the tee and says, yeah, I can pull off this tee shot, that gives me the best chance to make 4. Then full send. I'm actually in support of that.
I'm not, only in as much as on Saturday when he finished up his round, he almost put it in the drink. He was right on the bank, ended up having to chop out, ended up having to make a par. And again, situationally, you have 2 holes left. You're playing a par 4 that, yes, you can overpower. But I just wonder, given the situation, like, don't you want to sit here instead of always being married to this. We're always willing to go for it on fourth down because we're the Kansas City Chiefs and we have Patrick Mahomes and you don't. I can wrap my mind around that. But certainly somehow the situation has to come into this. If you're the Kansas City Chiefs and you're leading by three touchdowns, no, you don't go for it on fourth down. I would equate it to something along those lines, that you don't hit into the shift if all you need is a base hit. You don't need to send it into the corner and get multiple bases on this one. In this particular situation, a birdie would have tied him for the lead going into the final round. And there was a lot of different ways he could have done that. And maybe that was the best way for him to do it. I'm just curious if he never even considered that.
I tend to err on the side of players being over-aggressive as opposed to too conservative late on Sunday. Like, I want the guy who's trailing to go out and try and win it. Like, and he finally broke through or later this summer at the Northern Trust. But Tony Finau, for 5 years, I think you could criticize him for being too conservative or too safe on the back nine of tournaments that he could have, should have, maybe even would have won. That was his knock. We actually detailed that Saudi Arabia this year. I remember distinctly he had an opportunity to put the pedal down. He ended up laying up. He put it, he hit an iron off the tee, I think on 17 or 18, ended up hitting in the rough and could not make birdie on what should have been a 330-yard drivable full send hole. Like that, that epitomized Tony Finau's struggles. So if Taylor Pendrith, trailing by one shot, never won on the PGA Tour, decides to full send and thread the needle between a water hazard and a bunker, like, I like it. I like the aggressiveness. He clearly stepped up on that tee saying, this is my best chance to make four. I want to go out and win it. I kind of err on the side of the over aggressive as opposed to the guy.
I don't disagree with you.
It's just like a sign of his character.
I don't disagree with you. I just think there's a nuanced discussion to be had here somewhere between analytics and reality. If he lines up and he's decided this is the way I'm going to play the hole for the week, I'm totally fine with that, because you're probably right. We want to see aggressive play, and that's his strength. I get it. In this particular situation, I just think you can't be blinded by analytics in the heat of the moment when there is an obvious other choice that might be the better option. I feel like in this particular case, he was a one-track mind.
What happens if he lays it back and ends up making par and loses by one? You're going to say, hey, you're going to criticize him. And, hey, why'd you lay back on 17? With someone with your power, you could have really given yourself a short out and in there. Maybe even make three to take the lead.
Let's be clear. I'm not criticizing him. I'm simply pointing out that at some point I did not win the Finger Lakes Championship 15 years ago. So I don't have the pedigree to sit here and criticize him. What I'm trying to do here is frame a larger conversation about analytics and the way players, and look, I'm very good friends with Mark Kortz, and he is one of the stats guys, one of the best stats guys on the PGA Tour. And my guess is if he was having this conversation with us, he would admit that, yes, you have to take a nuanced approach to this, that it's not all or nothing. And I think in this particular case, maybe I would have criticized him. I doubt it. I mean, given the situations, given winds gusting to 40 miles an hour and a driving wind, I don't know that I would have. If he'd have lined up with an iron, I just don't know. It was funny that in this situation, the winner, Lucas Herbert, ended up hitting just a gorgeous iron off the 18th tee. And there was a moment of conversation in the telecast where the guys were like, wow, that's going to leave him so far back. And then we realized that, nope, he still has a mid short iron in. Like, he's fine. Put it on the green, two putted for par, victory, walked away. So I think in that particular case, I don't know. I think he adjusted to the situation and maybe Taylor did not.
I would have loved to be post-round with you as you just grilled guys over their course management decisions as the Golf Central reporter.
I will say this, though. There was a local IPA called The Rock, and it was absolutely glorious.
Taylor Pendrith, if you're listening, I fully support you. Full send. It's going to work out more times off than not. Rex, at the beginning of this podcast, I teased news, and then I got so distracted with my own failings, and then we got into your excursion in Bermuda. I completely forgot about this. We needed to get into this because you actually wrote it for golfchannel.com on Tuesday morning. That is the fact we are going to have some new green reading materials in early 22, assuming that the PGA Tour Player Advisory Council does sign off on this, which you'd think would happen. But all, you know those green reading books that everyone's you know, poking their nose in and squinting at, trying to read the 3% slope. Those will be no more. The only thing that players and caddies will be allowed to use, assuming this proposed rules goes through, is something called a committee-approved yardage book. And those new books essentially are just going to have, like, general information about slopes and not the nitty-gritty details that tends to bog down the pace of play on the PGA Tour. Rex, I guess, I mean, my opinion is that this is a good thing. I'm not sure it's going to substantially speed up play, but I do believe that green reading is a skill, and PGA Tour did what the USGA and RNA apparently refused to do, and that is to outlaw these books that kind of help guys read the greens on the PGA Tour, which I think is a good move by the pack.
Couple of clarifications. One, it's the policy board, and they're going to approve it next week.
Yep.
Is the policy board
you
meeting. It's going to be a rubber stamp. The reason why the USGA and the RNA, they are involved with this, it's going to be a local rule. They've worked with the PGA Tour, and all of those organizations are working closer together based on what's happened in the past. So before you completely do just a burn everyone going down this path, this is long thought out, long talked about. To your point, the idea is to speed up play. I actually talked to a caddy about this morning, and it probably will speed up play. This caddy's point was you're going to end up with some guys just spend more time wandering around the hole trying to understand the break a little bit better. But I think most people will tell you, players and caddies, that this only benefits a veteran. Like, it's only going to benefit someone who's been doing this a long time, puts the work in, walks the course, plays the practice rounds, pays attention, does all the right things. Now, where it's going to get tricky is the things that are allowed and not allowed. It's going to be a very fine line. It's what you and your caddy have seen, can see, or saw during a telecast. However, what happens
could you
if,
possibly prove that? How could you possibly prove that?
And here's the deal. We play the same courses largely year in and year out. So you know if you're on the third green, I don't know, at Harbortown, that if you're left of that day one pin, that it's a 3% slope. Maybe you wrote it in the book, maybe you don't, but you know it's a 3% slope. That's what they're trying to get away from. Do you expect the player just to forget? I think it's kind of silly because there's no way to police this. I get what the tour and the rulemakers are trying to do, and they're trying to speed up play, and what they don't want is Bryson taking out the textbook in the middle of a tournament round and bringing things to a screaming halt, and that might help, but I don't see. There's no way to enforce this.
No way to enforce this. They're not going to have a rules official on the first tee grabbing everyone's yardage book and making sure that it's the approved one. You did bring up Bryson, and he's the obvious one here because he is so methodical and data-oriented on the greens. I've actually talked to Bryson about this, and he thinks that he's going to have more of an advantage without the book as opposed to with the book, because he actually does believe that he is a terrific green reader, and that all of those numbers and slopes and all the data that's in those detailed yardage books is really just reinforcing his previously held notion about what the putt is going to do. That is Bryson's belief. I'm not saying it's right, but that is what Bryson believes. My question, I'm reading this memo, which has been out now for about 12 hours. It says such notes will be restricted to only those made by the player or caddy and must be derived from the experiences and or observations of a ball rolling on a green. This includes observations from a TV broadcast, transferring previous handwritten notes that also meet the new restrictions into the approved book is allowed. No devices, levels, or technology may be used to gather information to be kept as notes. So are you telling me that there is going to be a rules official out during practice rounds of PGA Tour events, making sure that Bryson does not have all of his various apparatuses to measure slopes, and then he's jotting down the information? Is that what you're telling me is going to happen during PGA Tour practice rounds?
Absolutely not. The tour does not want to get into the business of trying to police this. This is, at best, this is a broad stroke of saying, let's dial this back a little bit. No one wants to see textbooks and all of these papers out in the middle of the putting green at Harbortown. Let's just be a little bit more wiser about this. Again, and it's written, I mean, it's such a gray area between what you can do and what you can't do. Now, yes, if they see Bryson break out all the technology and the levels and everything else on the putting green on Sunday afternoon before he tees off.
No, I'm talking about Wednesday. I'm talking about Wednesday even afternoon. Wednesday, Bryson always goes out for a late practice round or a pro-am.
I mean, is someone
going to report him?
Yes, I can see that happening. Oh, absolutely, yes. Because there is nothing tour players like better than to tattle on other tour players.
Snitches get stitches, Rex.
That's what they say. I will say this, though, that someone will accidentally do something stupid, probably Bryson, if I had to guess on that front, because it's ingrained in him. He wants information. He's gonna dig out a level that's been in his bag for 3 years and put it on the green during a practice round, and someone's going to see it, and we're going to be writing about it. Because it's inevitable it's going to happen. It's just like this came up a few years ago when they started testing drivers for, I think, COR is what they're testing for. But essentially, they want to make sure that the thickness of the club face maintains a certain level, the USGA and RNA mandated levels. I was amazed at how many guys would tattle on someone else. And next thing you know, this guy's got to get his driver tested, and this guy complained about it. I mean, it just absolutely blew me away. The same thing's going to happen here.
Bryson is going to find a loophole, because that's what Bryson does, is Bryson finds loopholes. He finds loopholes in internal OB or lack thereof, such as that at TPC Sawgrass. Remember on 18, he was thinking about going. that seems like it was 4 years ago, but that was actually this year, like 7 months ago, when Bryson was going to go down the left side of 18 at TPC Sawgrass, because that was going to be a more direct route. Ended up not doing it. The tour put in Bryson stakes. And that's the thing. I see your meaty finger up in the air. Please, okay. Please.
Well, and I do want to read this, because it's an easy transition to our obvious next step. This is from a veteran caddy who texted me this morning. It only enhances my personal experience and expertise. Humble brag there. I never used a greens book. I have no problem with the new rule. The tour needs to be worried about their superstars going to Saudi Arabia, in my opinion. There's your transition, friend.
I don't disagree. I think that, just to put a fine point on it, green reading is a skill. Let the best green readers, whether it's a player or apparently a veteran caddy, let them thrive. Rex, you did allude to it on Thursday, I think, is when we did the podcast. All the news came out about Greg Norman basically fronting this shadowy new rival tour. Greg Norman has come out in various interviews and talked about how players are chomping at the bit. Last I checked, I have yet to see a single confirmed player make the jump for this Saudi Golf League. Apparently, the Premier Golf League is still up and kicking as well. You were on the ground in Bermuda. I'm not sure that field was necessarily the target for the Saudis and who they might be after, given the weak nature of that field. But what were players and caddies saying about this latest iteration of the Saudi Super Premier Golf League and its potential threat to the PGA Tour?
Well, I think first, the news that came out Friday, the quote-unquote news with the rabbit ears up, it fell short of what everyone was expecting. We were expecting the announcement of this proposed Super League. We now expected Norman to be named commissioner. Instead, it focused on what this investment firm, which is backed by the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, is investing in the Asian Tour, the 10-event series, the $200 million over 10 years, all part of the story. But by all accounts, this is going to be a slow trickle over the next few weeks and months that they have.
It can't be that slow. Greg Norman said they're going to have tournaments in early 2022, according to Greg Norman.
Wildly, wildly doubtful that could possibly happen. And here's why I say this in two fronts. One, I did talk to players, but two, I talked to some managers who had some players that would be in this conversation. And the one thing that I got from all of them was, how many people have signed up to do this? And the answer is always no one. There is one player that I would argue kind of publicly has come out. He's a European player. It's Lee Westwood. And he's the one that's probably come closest, and he did it at the Players' Championship. But just admitting, look, at my stage in my career,
of all places, yes, he came out at the PGA Tour flagship event.
And no, that's wrong. I'm sorry. He did it at the PGA Championship. I'm sorry. He did it at Kiwa Island is where he made that assessment, because they were meeting
not quite as impactful.
However, it was always, everyone wanted to say who was signed up for this. So everyone is very, very cautious of pointing out that where we are now in the process, there is no player who has publicly put their name to this. That being said, it seems like we're moving closer and closer to that. However, having now spoken to someone who's actually in the organization, it seems to me like they're going to move slowly and let this trickle out piece by piece. As a matter of fact, there was supposed to be a press conference this week that we were looking into going to, because we obviously wanted to talk to Greg Norman about what was going on. That has gotten called off for whatever reason, and they're going to continue to move forward, and we're going to see it will happen. I don't see how spring 2022 is an option. Now, to get to your question, there were two players I felt like in the Bermuda field that this would apply to. It was Patrick Reed, who declined to talk about it, and it was Graham McDowell, because he kind of fits, let's call it, the profile of what they're going to go after. A player at a certain stage in his career, travels internationally, maybe doesn't have a whole lot of juice left in the tank competitively, but is a name that can draw attention. And Graham was, as Graham normally is, very, very good. And I would encourage anyone to go listen to the interview, because I found it fascinating that as he was answering, he said a disruptor competition, is it good or bad? Like, we can sit here and argue that if the tour loses 10 of its stars, it's bad for the tour, but is it bad for golf? That to me sounds like someone who has already decided which way they're going to go on this, but that's where the conversation is going to go from here. Because we can sit here and talk about what's the moral obligations of playing a tour that is backed by money from the Saudi Arabian Sovereign Wealth Fund. That is one part of the conversation. The other part of the conversation, is this good for golf? And I think that's the bigger narrative going forward that we're going to have to address.
Good for golf. Disruptors are always good for golf because it makes the status quo, which in this instance is the PGA Tour, it makes them evolve. It makes them adapt. It makes them, you know, change their ways, which have proven to be very effective, very profitable. I think most players on the PGA Tour are very happy with their lot in life. But are there aspects of PGA Tour life that could be better? Absolutely. We touched on a few of them last week on the podcast. So if a Saudi golf league, if a Premier Golf League comes along and has a couple ideas that are inventive or ways that superstars, which are powering the PGA Tour, if you can make them a little bit happier and maybe catering to the superstars more than the 40-year-old journeyman, which is one of the knocks on the PGA Tour model, then yeah, I think these disruptors are good. Will it make the PGA Tour product worse if you have 10 of the top 25 players basically either get expelled, suspended, whatever the case may be, sent into timeout by playing the Saudi League? Yeah, that is bad for the PGA Tour product. I do not think we would get to that point. It's one of these entities is going to thrive. I can't imagine that both will be running concurrently. Do you agree with that assessment?
That seems like a long ways away. I mean, I don't even know if I've put much thought into that, because now all of a sudden you're talking about competition and which one in the long term. Again, this doesn't happen in my career. It probably doesn't happen in your career.
So just to kind of follow up on Graham's point. So if you have 10 of the top 25 who leave, right? Well, if this league is not up and running, these players right now have zero motivation to jump ship, because as soon as someone posts a tweet, smiling with the Saudi prime minister saying, yep, can't wait to join the league with Commissioner Norman, like, I'm really excited about the opportunity, he is suspended by the PGA Tour. So he does not have a place to play on the PGA Tour while the legal battle gets carried out in the courts. And in all likelihood, the Saudi Golf League is not going to be up and running, certainly by early 2022, as Greg Norman suggested. So that guy has zero place to play for the foreseeable future.
That's not correct.
Why would you do that?
Well, that's not correct. That's what the Asian tour is all about. So if push comes to shove, and again, there are varying levels to this argument. I think a lot of people on the side of the Super League believe that the tour is out of bounds when they start threatening to ban people for life. That would be a legal battle, and we would get caught up in the murk and the mire way down the road when it comes to that. However, in the short term, yeah, they could play the Asian tour. That's what that game's all about, man. That was that move. And they have created this feeder system. Now, whether or not
So you got to go play your 10 marquee events that Greg Norman just signed up for with the $20 million purses or whatever it's going to be?
Let's put a name on it. Let's say Phil Mickelson makes this move. Let's just say, hypothetically, someone who's been linked to this. Let's say Phil Mickelson makes that move. Yes, he has somewhere to go play where he can maintain to some level, probably not where he is now, but to some level, his world ranking points. And there's also the major championship equation. Like, the major championships may or may not stand in lockstep with the PGA Tour. We'll have to wait and see. But will the Masters go in with the PGA Tour and say anyone who makes this jump also cannot come and compete in the Masters, even as a former champion?
I could see the PGA champ. I could see the PGA of America. But I believe Seth Waugh, in fact, came out of Kiowa and said that he's in lockstep with the PGA Tour.
Yeah. I think that is going to be a conversation down the road. I think in immediate terms, the two things that come to mind are this. One, Greg Norman did stop short last week in saying that, yes, I'm the commissioner of this new tour. I'll be curious to see how this transpires really in the next month, because it will become a tipping point, because Greg Norman is the host of the QBE shootout. He is the longtime host.
PGA Tour sanctioned event.
And the problem with that is, and I'm sure that this is ongoing discussions in PGA Tour halls as we speak, is we cannot let him get in front of the press at a PGA Tour sanctioned event like Norman does every Wednesday at that event and talk about this competing league. We cannot let him get in the Golf Channel booth on Sunday or Saturday like he normally does and let him talk about the competition. So it's putting them in a situation where they need to be proactive, really, for the first time in all of this. And so within a month, we will see exactly how the PGA Tour at least is going to address this in the short term. There's also the question of the Saudi International. That would be the next tipping point. Are you going to let these players who have played in this event long term? Now, I was told, and this is probably a consideration more so for the players than the tour, those players who are going over there and play that thing signed long-term contracts. All of them.
Sure. Yeah.
Yes.
Probably not a 1-year
so
deal.
This is less about I'm getting paid this much to go over and play this year, and more so about I was paid this much to play five of those events, and I'm contractually obligated, and it's going to put me in a very, very difficult spot if you don't give me my release and allow me to go over and do this. And so all of these things are more immediate things that the tour has to address. But yes, I get the long-term conversation about, is there room for two quote unquote world tours? I don't know the answer to that.
So do you think Greg Norman, a lifetime member of the PGA Tour, do you think he gets banned from his own QBE shootout in a month?
It's going to be the litmus test. It's going to be the first and probably most telling litmus test, simply because
I think you have to. I think he's not announced anything yet.
So that's the point. He has flirted and he's insinuated and he's kind of said, wink, wink, you know, this is what we're trying to do when we have bigger plans. This is the Asian tour. This is what the investment we're making. And we have bigger plans. Wink, wink. Now, I don't know if there's anything that he has announced publicly up to this point that would motivate PGA Tour to step in and say, yep, just like we promised, you're done, you're excommunicated, you're verboten, you're out of here. And your event is going to be named something else and someone else will be the host. Because it's not run by his organization. That's a distinction that was flushed out last week. So it's worth pointing out.
Yeah, the tour's in a tricky spot because you don't want to lend credibility and credence to Norman's ideas by banning him, which is exactly what if you excommunicate him, then you're basically saying we're taking this threat very seriously, right? Like, to me, that's how, like, we have not seen a PGA Tour statement regarding this new affiliation with Greg Norman and Live Golf Enterprises, whatever he's calling it. So, like, you can't, I can see why you wouldn't do that, but I'm also not sure you can let him go in the Golf Channel booth unchecked. Yeah. And just, what if he goes rogue?
Yes.
What if he just starts bashing the PGA Tour product and basically just turns the 3-hour telecast into a promotional window for his new golf enterprise? Like, you can't risk that either. That is a tricky situation.
You can't do that. I don't even think you can allow him to have the normal Wednesday press conference, because I mean, being honest, I put in for a credential. I haven't covered that event in years, but if there's the opportunity that Greg's going to stand in front of the media on Wednesday at a PGA Tour sanctioned event and talk about all of the beauty and all of the attributes of this new global tour, got to be there for that. That is must-see TV, because that's when, up until this point, I will give the PGA Tour credit. They have refused to address this for the reason that there's no reason to address this. Why would you address something that did not have a face, that had made no public announcement, that it was all just speculation up to that
point? It still might not even happen.
It still might not even happen. I'm not even convinced. Again, a lot of calls last week with agents who were asking, like, point blank, how many people are signed up for this? Like, it seems to me they're, whatever's going on, the Super League and Norman is trying to leverage the attention they have right now to move this thing forward. Whether or not it works or not remains to be seen, but I don't think we have anybody with their name signed on the dotted line.
Are you canceling that credential request if Greg Norman is taken off the interview schedule?
Yes. I mean, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so. There's three events, Rex, not including the CBE shootout, which is an unofficial event, of course, on the PGA Tour schedule. Three events left on the Tour's fall slate. That includes this week in Mayakoba. Boy, a pretty good field has assembled. I think it's like 11 of the top 25. JT, Victor Hovland, the defending champion, Brooks Koepka gearing up for a showdown with Bryson, Tony Finau, just to name a few. What are you most looking forward to here? Maybe not necessarily Mayakoba. I know you're going to be back in the field next week in Houston. What are you looking forward to in this last little slate of tournaments before we actually get a somewhat of a shutdown?
When you see a guy, and it was fun last week talking to Patrick Reed about how much he was going to play in the fall and how he tries to use the fall to really catapult him into the regular season, and coming off of what happened to him at the end of the regular season with the pneumonia and not probably playing his best, I can see a couple of players doing that. You talk about JT playing this week. Certainly, Ricky Fowler being in the field is interesting to me because he did show
last
some
event before he becomes a father.
That's right. Well, good for you. But he showed some signs of life in Las Vegas. So can he maintain that? Whatever it is that he talked to Butch Harmon about and sort of got his head straight, can he keep moving in that direction? So there are quite a few, and this will probably be the best field of the year going forward. So yeah, this one I'll pay attention to.
I feel like I need to cover this event moving forward.
Like go to it? Like go to Mexico?
Yeah. Yeah. Really?
You're gonna do that.
It looks like a really cool golf course. I mean, I'm not sure if they're paying the guys under the table or if they really just like the treatment that they get at Mayakoba Resort. But, like, this is a very good field. So there clearly must be something appealing about it. Have you ever been there?
I've been to Cancun. I've never covered this event. What event haven't you covered on the PGA Tour that you're just dying to cover?
This would be on the short list. I wouldn't mind covering RSM, but I know that's your fifth major. I'm trying to think, what event on the PGA Tour have I not covered that I'm interested in covering?
I've got mine, and you're not going to believe it. Like when I tell you, you're going to be blown away.
Okay, so I've been to Kapalua, but I have not covered the Tournament of Champions. Not necessarily sure I want to. I'd like to cover the Scottish Open, which is now going to be on the PGA Tour schedule.
On both of our schedules next year, by the way.
Sure. I mean, I think I've covered every other one that I want to. Did that answer?
Really?
Did I even give an answer? So I think Kapalua, Mayakoba. I mean, I've been to Sea Island, and I'm sure I need to cover the tournament. I've been to Sea Island. Yeah, I would say Kapalua, even though I've been there, and Mayakoba. That's it. That's on my wish list.
All right, I got it. Mine is Phoenix, Scottsdale. I have never covered that event. I've always wanted to just I just want to see the spectacle.
I covered one Phoenix Open. It was 2018, I think it was. Was that Johnny Miller's swan song when Ricky won?
You went out and wrote the Johnny piece.
So I was there to do a Johnny feature. I never need to cover that tournament again.
All right.
That was not my scene. It is definitely not your scene.
I just want to see it. I don't want to sit and party with these people. I just kind of want to see them. It sounds like a pretty cool scene.
I mean, pretty cool. It's disgusting. If I was a player, I would absolutely hate it because there's just debauchery happening everywhere. There's basically just like ambient noise the entire time. Like you're just not going to be settled over a shot. And have just, you know, a quiet conversation with your caddy. That just doesn't exist. Why don't you put that on your schedule this year?
Yeah, it doesn't fit. It doesn't. Like it
doesn't fit.
I want to go to Torrey. I want to go to L.A. That's it. That kind of splits up the West Coast. Although you and I are probably going to fight for L.A., aren't we? You want to do L.A. too, don't you?
I mean, that's going to be the best that's going to be the best field of the spring. We can certainly, I'm sure we could double team it. We got plenty of money in the travel budget.
Sure. No, I could probably do it. I'll probably revisit that schedule. And you do want to do Maui, by the way. I will correct you for no other reason than it's a 30-man field and you're in Maui. Trust me, you want to do that. Tournament of Champions is a tournament you want
to cover.
I
feel like that $7,500 trip is going to be a tough sell with the accounting folks. I feel like it is. I feel like that ship has sailed.
Well, you don't know unless you ask. That's all I'm asking.
That's a good point.
That's right.
Rex, what else is on your wish list for tournaments to be covered in 2022?
Normal run. Like, I don't know. I'd like to mix it up. Like, I think both of us would like to mix it
up. I always say that. Like, I want to cover something I haven't covered, and then I always just write down the same ones.
Well, and what's interesting this year, and we're probably going to have to talk about, is with the playoff events, with Memphis kind of sliding in and you no longer having that New Jersey, New York, Boston event.
I've already called dibs on Delaware. Yep. I want to go to Wilmington
really?
Country Club for the BMW. Yep.
Why?
I've never been to Delaware.
I was in Delaware just 2 months ago for a lacrosse tournament. Trust me.
How is it?
I don't want to talk bad about Delaware. Let's just move on. Like, I would rather, I think you can have the BMW. I guess that
Delaware has like 17 residents. I'm sure none of them are listening. Go ahead. Give us your true feelings about the state of Delaware.
And I was in Dover. I was at a lacrosse tournament and stayed at a casino. That's probably not what
you don't even gamble.
I don't gamble. It wasn't a very good casino hotel. Again, it was a lacrosse tournament. I will say this. They know how to lacrosse. There was a craft beer truck at this lacrosse tournament.
My goodness.
Oh, yeah. It made the whole week go.
I'll have two double IPAs.
And don't
mind me while I absolutely berate my son.
Never yell at my son. Don't understand lacrosse. That's why it's the perfect sport. I just sit and clap. Yay, sports.
I want to cover the Zozo in Japan.
Really?
I've never been to Japan. I was really looking forward to the Olympics, of course, and then COVID happened and it was super tight restrictions. I want to go to Japan when there are no restrictions and I can just live lavishly on our $65 a day per diem.
Well, and you would want to do Dubai/Abu Dhabi. Like both
yes.
of those are
okay. Are, yep. I would put that on the schedule as well. Okay.
Yeah. I've done both of those.
If we're gonna start traveling abroad, I'd like to do that.
Throwing it out there.
Yeah,
are you going to start traveling abroad or no? I mean, you still haven't decided.
I mean, I have traveled abroad. I'm certainly planning on it. I just re-upped my global entry.
Okay.
I actually just got my seven week old daughter a passport. She will not be coming with us on our Scottish boondoggle next year.
Why would you get your 7 week old? Where are you going?
We are going to. Well, we're going to Turks and Caicos in March. I don't think she's coming on that. But we're going to, what's it called? Are we going to Bermuda? I think it is Bermuda.
Are you going to Bermuda?
No, we're not going to Bermuda. I think we're going to the Bahamas.
I will say this about Bermuda, and you said this early in the podcast. I'm just going to correct you. That was not the first tournament I have covered. I covered a Grand Slam of golf once in Bermuda, and I took my wife, and she did not like it.
First official tournament.
Okay, I'll go with that. She did not like it. I don't know that I particularly enjoyed it very much. This time, just I think it's where we stayed more than anything else was so much more enjoyable. We stayed at a smaller resort. It was right next to the hotel, Pompano Beach Resort. It's tiny. There's only so many rooms. There's a cool bar. There's a cool restaurant. Like it was a very, very good spot.
I'm glad you had a great week there.
I did.
I can't remember where we're going. I'm going to have to ask my wife. I don't book these vacations.
All right, let's finish off. What's on the grill this week?
Rex, I got to say, best ribs I've ever made on Saturday. I believe I sent you a Snapchat. That is the extent of our Snapchat conversations is just grill photos back and forth. This weekend, it's going to be pretty blustery. High of 60 on Saturday. Winds of 25 mile an hour. Certainly not ideal drum smoker weather. But I'm sure we'll fire up something. It's our anniversary today, 8-year anniversary. I'll be making some filet mignon later. And then I'll figure out something to throw on the grill. You're home for like 6 days. What are you going to be firing it up?
You know what? I'm having, it's my son's last high school football game of this season.
And so we're having a bunch of friends over on Friday. So I think I am going to do ribs all day Friday. Just to
How are you going
to
cook them? People. Low and slow or hot and fast?
Hot and fast. It seemed to be a much easier way to do it.
275, baby. Render that fat.
There you go.
Abaco. I think we're going to Abaco.
All right. I'm glad we got there. That made for a good podcast. For
you. Yeah, I think.
Dig through all of your emails until you find out where your wife told you you're going later this year.
I think that's why our 7-week-old needed to have a passport. We have rambled on far too long in this Golf Central podcast presented by Callaway Golf. Thank you for following along on that incredible journey. Look forward to cutting it up with Rex again next week before he heads to Houston for the penultimate event of the 2021 calendar year PGA Tour schedule. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Big words.